Now, Lebanese-born Alyssa Ghazal is an actress, a filmmaker, and once upon a time, she was a professional chef. She even played a chef in the web series I Love You But. Food is a passion that began in her mother's kitchen in Lebanon, where Alyssa was surrounded by great cooks. And she has invited Amal Awad into her kitchen, where she cooked a childhood favourite. It's a Lent dish called mujada, which has many incarnations around the world. And while Alyssa cooked, she told our Amal all about her mother and the amazing dishes that she cooked, as well as the culture that connects so many people to food.
Food does more than sustain us. It ties us to culture, creates memories, and brings people together. In my case, I was lucky enough to experience my mother's cooking, traditional Arabic dishes, with a Palestinian twist, and the occasional lasagna or takeaway pizza thrown in. Now, I'm an okay cook, but I'm not great at the dishes my mother used to make. They were full of flavour, and they required great skill. They can take hours to prepare, which is fine when you're feeding a family of six. It's not so easy when you're cooking for two. Still, it's a gap in my knowledge that I'm starting to feel. I'm curious about the way food pulls us in and triggers memories. Because for me, Arabic food is much more than a tasty dish from the homeland. It's my childhood. It's my mother in the kitchen. I wanted to explore this idea with someone who, like me, has Arab heritage.
Hi, Amal. Welcome to my kitchen.
Thank you for having me. I have long been a fan of Alyssa Ghazal. She lives in Sydney, but was born in Lebanon. Alyssa is an actress, a filmmaker, and once upon a time, she was a professional chef. She even played a chef in the web TV series I Love You But. And of course, she's passionate about food. Today, she's going to cook for me as we unpack her own connection to the kitchen.
So what are we cooking today?
Well, today I'm cooking our family's favourite dish and I'm using my mum's recipe. It's mujaddara. Mujaddara is a Lent dish, which is basically lentils with a handful of rice that's been stewed with a bit of onion. My memories of my childhood on Fridays was that if you lived in a Christian household, then every Friday is Lent day. Every Friday is a no meat day. And it became part of the culture. We forgot that it was originally for religious reasons. Without even thinking about it, on Friday, even to this day, and I'm not religious at all, I have to cook a non-meat dish. And we actually looked forward to it. Not that we ate that much meat, because meat was really expensive. We had a lot of vegetables, and Mum would just throw in a few morsels because we could only afford a few morsels.
Mujaddara is a popular vegetarian dish in the Arab world. It has rice, lentils, and caramelized onions, which you serve with some yogurt and a salad. How you make it will depend on where you're from. Alyssa, being Lebanese, is cooking her dish a bit differently to how my Palestinian mother cooks it. Alyssa puts in her onions first, not last, and she's making a raw cabbage salad to go with it, not a green one. And the Egyptians, they have a completely different take altogether. Theirs is called kushari, and they add pasta to it. Alyssa, why did you pick this dish? I know that it has a lot of personal significance for you.
Although I can cook well, this is one recipe that my mum excelled in, and I have not to this day been able to replicate the flavour. They have a saying in Arabic, when someone is a good cook, they say "andu nafas awi," nafasun awi, which means that they add something, like they put their soul in the dish. And I think what Mum did with her dishes, that she put her soul in them, and I can't do that. I put my own soul, of course, but I have not been able to replicate her mujaddara. So I always make it, and it's almost there. But there's always something missing, and it could be my mum's touch, my mum's soul, my mum's breath. But that's the closest I'm going to get to her, and it's special.
Mm.
I grew up in a household of cooks. My mum was an amazing cook, so was my grandmother. Both my aunties on both sides. Mum's sister had her own restaurant in Beirut, which she ran for 40 years, and she was well known for her tabikh, which is, you know, the casseroles. They would always cook slow. Once she's cooked them, she would put them on top of charcoal heaters, and they would stay there for... It's almost like the old version of today's bain-marie, really. But she would start cooking at 4 in the morning, then she would put them on top of these charcoal terracotta pots, and they would stay warm all day, and people would come and have their main meal during the day. But she also made the meanest fool dish I've ever had, which is ful mudammas, which is fava beans. My other aunt on my dad's side was an amazing cook. She made the best cakes, and she really excelled in a lot of local village dishes.
And now that the onions are nice and brown,
so I grew up basically in a kitchen.
In and just coat them with a little bit of the oil and the flavour, the caramelised flavour of the.
I'm from a village called Mashghara, which is in the southwest of the Bikar Valley. It's about 990 metres above sea level. We never had a car. We walked everywhere, and it was a steep valley. So we were really healthy. We grew our own food. We grew our own fruit. And in summer, my biggest, fondest memory was of Dad waking us up at 4 in the morning to get up and go to the land to pick apples or cherries or figs or grapes, depending on the season, of course, and what was available. And when we were kids, we used to always complain because we were on summer holidays and all we wanted to do was sleep in. But now I look back at it with incredible fondness because it taught me a lot about where food comes from and how hard it is and how long you have to wait for certain things to ripen. Whereas now people aren't even aware. They go into a supermarket and it's there and it's packaged in plastic 3 times. And that's why I keep a garden going in my backyard.
So you're basically replicating what you had in Lebanon in Sydney.
Yes. I never intended it to be like that. But now that both my parents are gone, I feel like there's this emotional connection to land and to growing food that I can't escape. I think when I was much younger, I didn't really care. I think my lawn died. You know what I mean? Whereas now it's a completely different kettle of fish and I'm much more connected to it and it's a link.
Smells so good.
Doesn't it? I love the smell of lentils cooking.
Food is everywhere now. You can't log on to social media without there being photos of outrageous desserts and the reality shows featuring cooks and aspiring cooks, and everything is so prevalent now. How do you sort of perceive that world of cooking as someone who has a real passion, and it's been a long-standing passion for you as well?
It's a bit of an overkill, I think. I call it food porn. A lot of people have used that term. And it is food porn. It's become competitive. Like, they have competitions about who's going to cook what with shackles on their legs. It's like, I just find the whole thing really silly.
Does it take the love out of it a bit for you?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, I will never stop being passionate about food, but I think it makes things look either too hard or too easy. It also gives people the wrong impression about food. It doesn't always have to be so 5 stars. Food, the most delicious food for me is the simplest of food. The food does not require a whole lot of machinery, a whole lot of equipment, and these incredible kitchens. I don't like it. I think what I hate most than anything is the plagiarizing that happens.
Great. Now I sound like one of those chefs on TV who taste their food and go, oh, it's lovely.
It's amazing.
Amazing. Get someone else to taste it and tell you it's amazing.
So many times I've seen recipes highlighted saying, oh, this is a Middle Eastern flavoured or Middle Eastern inspired dish. And then you go through the ingredients and basically they've added a bunch of pistachio nuts or a pinch of cumin or even pomegranate seeds, which is really now popular. And all of a sudden you have a Middle Eastern dish. I used to joke to my friends that I was going to one day have open up the Hummus Protection Society. People don't get hummus. They just think hummus means dip in Arabic, and it doesn't. Hummus means chickpeas. So if whenever I see things like beetroot hummus or capsicum hummus or God knows what hummus, I just totally cringe. I just think, no, you can't call beetroot hummus. You're saying actually beetroot chickpea. It does not make sense.
So you're boycotting beetroot hummus?
Call it a beetroot dip. I love beetroot dip. But don't call it beetroot hummus. To me, it's totally plagiarizing and also not paying respect to the origin of the dish.
And that's because its food is so much more than a bunch of flavors, isn't it? It's actually a cultural thing.
Absolutely. Food is culture. You can't take Chinese food away from Chinese culture, and you can't take Arabic food away from Arabic culture.
What are the flavors of the Middle East then?
Look, I think spices are essential. Spices and herbs are absolutely essential depending on what you're making. Certain nuts are essential, certain fruits, certain vegetables are essential. It's also how you put the dish together and what ingredients you mix together. If you're making hummus and you see, if you buy a tin of hummus,
We'll keep going with the hummus. We'll keep going, yeah, this is clearly your passion.
If you look at the ingredients of some hummus dips and you find you've got canola oil in it, don't bother. You never put oil in hummus when you're mixing it.
Does beetroot chickpea dip actually have chickpeas in it?
No. It's just blended beetroot with God knows how many other preservatives in it.
Really?
Yes. It's beetroot that's been boiled and mixed, and some people put mayonnaise in it or yogurt or God knows what preservative. But they call it beetroot hummus because I don't know who invented this concept, but I'm convinced they think hummus means dip.
You were in the kitchen with your mother as a child. Did she ever pull you aside and actually say, here, this is how you cook, or how did you learn?
I watched. Mum was a control freak in the kitchen, so we weren't allowed to do or touch anything. Yes, she wanted me to wash the dishes, whereas I would prefer to be, you know, stirring the onions. However, we watched because we lived in that room, and so I watched her and my grandma preparing things, and so I basically learned from watching. And as we got older and we wanted to experiment ourselves, Mum would freak out because, oh my God, what are you doing in my kitchen? And no, that's not how you do it. I remember having an argument with her one day because I bought an Italian cookbook and I wanted to make cannelloni, which was stuffed with a bolognese and a cheese. And, you know, so I followed the recipe to a T, and every time Mum would walk into the kitchen, she'd go, no, that's not how you do it. I'll tell you how to do it. It's like, how would you know? You've never cooked it in your life. And I remember we had this huge, big argument about it. And I walked off and I came back and she'd already cooked it. And it was absolutely fantastic.
When did you finally get your mum's tick of approval with cooking?
When? I can't say. She's been dead for 12 years, and I cooked for her a few times and she liked my food, but whenever we wanted to eat, we always went to her. I never wanted to take over from her at all. But I think the best compliment I ever had was from my late uncle, who was visiting us from Lebanon about a year or so after she died, and I made quite a big I made a lunch for him, which included some really difficult recipes, including stuffed vine leaves and things like that. And I remember he was sitting down to eating and he turned around and said, Alisa, عندك نفس أمك, you have your mum's soul in that food. And I was so blown away when he said that. To eat. Come and join us for lunch, why don't you?
It's clear that food was so important to you growing up, and even now it's just a part of your life. What is it about food, do you think, that makes people feel so good and beyond the basic sort of idea of nourishment? What is it about food? Is it the smell, the memory we connect to it? What do you think it is that makes people so attached to the kitchen?
To me, food is the essence of life. It's what keeps us going. It nourishes us. But there's also flavour involved. And I also, I'm a strong believer that there is a childhood memory that's associated with flavour. And that there are flavours that we acquire as kids, as babies and as children that remains with us for the rest of our lives, and it influences how we eat and what we eat as adults. Not everyone has a love for food, depending on how they were raised and what they were fed as kids, of course. But I think you could say I'm slightly obsessed, but... However, I think food is the essence of life, and it's magic. Food is magic.
If you're interested in Alisar's recipe for amjadara, you can find it on the ABC Life Matters website.
I am so with Alisar Ghazal on the Hummus Protection Society. All those fusions drive me crazy. I love the pure stuff. What a wonderful story from our producer, Amal Awad, about Alisar Ghazal. And as you heard, that recipe will be on the Life Matters program page. It's probably going to bring down our system, I'm sure. So thank you very much to Amal for that story.